This call is being recorded.
Okay, good evening. This is John Richardson speaking to you this evening from Toronto, Canada. Today is February the 4th, 2020, and this is one more of my series of interviews for the tutors who so generously offer their services on the Facebook LSAT Study Group site. Which is great, and I've done a couple of them. I have some more to do, and tonight I have the privilege of speaking with Troy Pazuka, who is certainly one of the more prominent tutors on the board. He lives in Illinois, where I'm speaking with him tonight. So how are you this evening, Troy?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thanks. So let me begin by thanking you very much for all the time you spent with the questions that you've constructed and posted on the site, and generally, you know, I think making the group a better thing. So thank you very much for that.
No problem. Yeah, I'm trying to post more nowadays, and they seem to be really helping the people who use them. So glad to be helping that in that way.
Well, you know, you certainly seem to have a passion for this, and you know, I've got to say that everybody else who I've interviewed so far, and it seems to me everybody on that board has a great passion for it. Why are you so interested in LSAT anyway? I mean, you have a clear interest in this stuff. Nobody could construct these kinds of questions who wasn't interested in it.
Sure, yeah. If you weren't interested in them, they would seem pretty bland and sterile, I imagine. I'm just interested in basically helping people develop their critical thinking skills, their reading skills, etc. I think that a lot of problems in our world are caused by people rushing to judgments, not considering fully the evidence, and maybe not even having the capacity to consider the evidence and just know about the world in general. A lot of these LSAT questions require you to know something about the world, and I think we need more knowledge to make our world a better place.
Well, certainly the reading and thinking skills are critical, and you know, I think it's pretty clear that the LSAT, whatever it tests, it certainly tests the ability to understand information, meaning read it and think about it and analyze it, so reasoning as well. So I gather that you see the kind of reasoning that's required for LSAT as kind of a proxy for the kind of reasoning that's required for life. Is that right?
Oh, for sure. Not only the reasoning required for law school and the bar exam and your profession, but in intimate relationships, in familial relationships, in political organizing and activities. Basically, these, you know, I write so many LSAT questions, and usually, I'm sure you've seen, they're about real world topics, and they're about they're sometimes about conversations I'm having on the group, you know, but yeah, these kinds of, once you really get deep into the structure of the thoughts and the arguments on the LSAT, you can start seeing flawed and incomplete thought patterns at play pretty much in every aspect of our world. And you can just start imagining, well, like, if people knew better, what kind of world could we have?
Okay, so you know, you mentioned law, legal reasoning, and that sort of thing. So just in the interest of helping people get to know you better, so you're a law school graduate and you're admitted to the bar as well, that's correct?
Yeah, that's right. I was just doing 15 hours of continuing legal education for my...
Oh my God, that's awful. what were you doing? What kind of CLE?
Oh, you know, I just did whatever I could find. You know, I was late in getting it done, you know, because I'm not practicing law, so it's not high on my to-do list. But anyway, I had to do it, and so I had like one or two days to do it. So I was just, I did, you know, how to start a law firm and this and that, and you know, all kinds of videos online, and I just had to complete those the other day.
Is there a test at the end of those? This is for what, the state? Well, where are you admitted? Illinois?
Illinois. I'm admitted in Illinois. And there was no test. There was just a few questions, and then you had to certify that you had watched everything. And so that's what I did.
Uh-huh. And that's an annual thing, I take it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like every, I think at the beginning when you're admitted, it's every year. And then I think it's every 3 years, but you pretty, I don't know, it's complicated. But the guy who was explaining it to me on the phone said, don't worry about it for now. Just get these 15 hours done.
Yeah, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the only good continuing legal education is finished continuing legal education. You know, that stuff can be a real cutting into your time. So yeah. Why did you want to go to law school in the first place? What was going on in your life?
Well, it wasn't necessarily anything, any kind of like active choice, I would say. Both my parents are graduates from Harvard Law School. That's where they met. And I figured I was interested in teaching. I was interested in politics. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to do a formal career in either of those. And so I said, well, in terms of career, why not go to law school? I'm sure that I'll be, you know, somewhat familiar with what's going on there. And, you know, just from picking things up, just, you know, from my parents or whatever. And so I decided to go to law school. There wasn't too much behind the decision.
Did you enjoy it? Did you think it feel was a good 3 years?
That's an interesting question. So the first business I ever started was, I sort of started this one. It was an online law school, because in my experience, law school is just horrendously taught. It's even worse than the LSAT in terms of, you know, how poorly it's taught in general. And so I was gearing up to start an online law school called Pro Bono U. And I had, you know, filmed some commercials and gotten some app designs done, and I was starting to write content. The only reason I didn't continue with it is because, well, A, there's all these legal hurdles to establishing an official law school for sure. And then B, with all those hurdles and the content requirements, I thought it was going to require a lot of people, and I wanted to start a business that I could just get going by myself. And so I transitioned to this other business idea that I came up with along the way, which was basically a furniture and moving and storage business and all kinds of things like that. But obviously that was before I started teaching LSAT. But so to answer your question, like law school, I did not find it, I found it enjoyable. I think WashU, where I went, it was a great campus, and I love St. Louis. But law school itself was sort of not a waste of time, because it's good stuff to learn, but the teaching is just so poor that I spent most of my time avoiding class, reading books outside of class, and then teaching the people who had been in the class and trying to pick up some things that they knew because I had not been in class.
Tell me more about your perception of law school teaching. Why did you find it poor?
Well, I mean, first of all, a lot of people are not, I guess it all starts with the reading. The idea that you're going to learn about the law from reading judicial opinions, which are not meant to teach you about the law, but are meant to apply the law to specific factual scenarios, it just doesn't make any sense. There's no other field that's taught in that way. I mean, of course, there really can't be any other field taught in that way, because there's not judicial opinions about medical issues and stuff. Well, I mean, I guess there are, but you know what I mean. I think, it's so much easier to learn the law through nutshells and this and that, outlines and, you know, topical presentations that are not case study based, not case study, but judicial opinion based. Don't get me wrong, reading a judicial opinion, developing the skills to do that is totally necessary, but that can be done in like, you know, a couple courses. Not every course needs to be taught like that. And so that's a big part of it, just the case method. And the Socratic method, I'm a big fan of the Socratic method. I think you just heard me teaching one of my students. I'm just constantly making them.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Thank you. But what they talk about as the Socratic method in law school, in my opinion, is not really a Socratic method. It's more of informational regurgitation. And a lot of people didn't read and they don't know the answer. So you're just wasting a lot of time in class. And then there's the issue also of just the basic background that students are assumed to have is not there. It wasn't there for me either. It's not like I had it either, but I at least knew that something was missing and I went to learn it. But a lot of the courses, I mean, I remember my torts course, we were so confused until the professor at some point said, wait, hold on. Do you guys know what a pleading is? And you know, what the different, you know, sections of a pleading are, different counts and stuff like this, you know, claims. And then once he explained that stuff, everything made a lot more sense that we were doing, but like that was weeks in and nobody knew. And he was one of the best teachers. And so, you know, if we hadn't had him, we would have just been lost for even longer. And so anyway, there's a lot of different factors which make law school notoriously difficult. And I think a lot of people feel that it's just inherently difficult, but I personally think it's that the way it's taught that makes it so difficult.
Well, so you talk about essentially knowledge gaps as part of the problem. So there are, I understand, the summer pre-law prep programs, you know, to fill some of that stuff in.
Yeah.
If you were to design a pre-law prep program, what would it consist of? How would you prepare people for law school itself?
Sure. Well, you know, I think a lot of it would have to consist of the detailed mechanics of the legal process, criminal system and civil system. And then I think a lot of it also is civics-based stuff, which I don't think people learn anymore. And so just how the courts, the legislature, legislatures, and all these governmental bodies operate. And then also probably some political philosophy also about the role of government in general. And then of course, this I guess possibly included in how the court system would operate, but the role of, you know, all this precedent and judicial opinions and the judiciary and lawyers as agents of the judiciary and also agents of their clients and stuff like that.
Okay. So what do you think if you had to choose one skill set, though? So we talked about the pre-law program as sort of a knowledge-based thing, civics, how the courts work, this sort of stuff.
Right.
That's kind of separate from, I think, skills, though. If you had to identify one or two skills that you think are essential for law school, what would they be? In other words, somebody came to you and said, I want
reading,
you to get me better
writing.
Reading it's and writing.
Yeah, it's got to be writing and writing. I mean, writing is so much of law school. I mean, it's everything. Everything you're doing. And now they're doing some multiple choice and stuff. But traditionally and still, like, all you're graded on is your written products, which is often how it is as an attorney. And how do you learn the stuff, the information and stuff that you need to produce a well-written, finished product? Is by reading. You can, you know, participate in conversations too in class and stuff, but you're expected, if you're going to do that, to be doing the reading so that you can contribute. So reading and writing have got to be the top two.
Would you say that the LSAT is essentially designed to weed people out who have reading skills that are not good enough for law school?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, you know, you could probably, I don't know that being an attorney is as heavily reading based as being in law school is.
Well, there's nothing that's as heavily reading based as being in law school. Probably nothing.
Oh yeah. Right. Yeah. Maybe a PhD program or something in like a history major or something, but it's different type of reading anyway there, although there's similarities, but yeah. So I don't know that it's essential to do so, but I think it definitely does do that, keep people out until they learn how to read very well, or at least well enough.
And would you say that the kinds of skills that you help improve people on with the LSAT, right? Do you consider these to be academic skills, LSAT skills, life skills, all of the above?
All of the above. I mean, they're definitely, I can't remember all the ones you listed, but they're definitely legal and law school and LSAT and bar exam skills. And obviously, you know, the JD is an academic pursuit, so they're academic skills to that extent, and they pay off in other areas. If you were going to, you know, do other academic programs, they would be valuable too, the reading and reasoning skills. And then life skills too. I mean, so much of life, at least modern life, is reading, making agreements, sometimes writing agreements, and speaking. So I think that, you know, like people say, there's this idea of, you know, whether the LSAT and certain tests in general are measuring intelligence. And of course, they're not completely measuring intelligence, because you could be a great mechanic or whatever and have no idea how to do the LSAT, but you have a lot of knowledge, of course, right? But I think there is something to the idea that these are intelligence tests, because reading and communication are pervasive in every field. Even if you're a great mechanic, you need to talk to your customers, you need to make contracts and agreements with them, etc. And if you can't talk and read and write, which is what this test is about, they don't measure your speaking skills, but if they're measuring your reading and writing skills, I mean, that's basically the same skills as speaking, I believe, well, largely. And so if you can't do those things, you're going to come off as unintelligent, sort of, because you're not going to be able to participate or in any kind of profession very well, not in a really great way, I don't think.
What do you think about the LSAT writing sample? I mean, do you think that has anything to do with measuring writing skills?
For sure, to some extent. I mean, like you could just look at, you know, if we had every member in the group do a little piece of writing, you could rank them and see, you know, everybody would pretty much agree, oh yeah, these people write better, these people write worse. So of course it's a particular type of writing, it's not poetry and stuff, so maybe you could write poetry really well and not do well on that, but for sure there's some kind of, there's vocabulary, there's grammar, there's spelling, there's, you know, all kinds of things being tested by the LSAT writing sample. And maybe less so now that you have time to do it. I don't know probably to this pretty much the same degree. I don't think it's changed that much, but yeah, I think it's definitely measuring some good things, but of course it's not measuring everything about writing. And it's only one, it's only a type of a type. It's only, you know, argumentative writing in a certain form and stuff like that. So what do you think about that?
I think that the writing sample, I think that people are too quick, or at least I don't know what they're doing now. I haven't taught this stuff for some time, but you know, during the years that I was doing it, I thought people didn't take it seriously enough because it didn't contribute towards the LSAT score per se. Yeah.
Right.
But you know, many years ago, and I mean many years ago, you know, I was on the admissions committee in a law school, and you know, one value the writing sample has, that it's definitely a check to see if the personal statement could possibly have been written by that person.
Right.
And I mean, I know there's a huge sort of aftermarket out there of people doing personal statements. I mean, I think that that's one of the things you assist with, isn't it? Personal statements.
Yeah, I do. I try to make sure that, you know, I really get the students involved. I don't want to be writing their personal statement. I want to,
you know, obviously you can't write it for them. Yeah.
Yeah. But there is a concern. Like if it's going to be better than your writing sample, what do you do about, I mean, you know, better than your, yeah, LSAT writing sample, what do you do about that? And so part of that is, well, do learn how to write, at least for the writing sample purposes, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty formula-driven thing.
True.
I think that most people can be taught to at least manage that well enough to mask most of their deficiencies.
Right.
Which is important. This is interesting. If you were to look at the other three main topic areas on the LSAT, the games, the reasoning, the reading comp, mm-hmm. I mean, could you identify, I'd be interested in your thoughts on what is something that you think each of those sections tests that's relevant to reading, reasoning, life? Where do you all see them as testing the same thing, but just from slightly different prisms?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The one thing that I think they test most, especially if you're not working with a great tutor, is your ability to figure things out. Because how are you going to learn these things? I mean, it's just so much information. When I was studying, for example, I self-studied with my partner at the time. She got a 99th percentile. I got a 98th percentile after about 3 months of studying, or 4 months. I don't remember. But like, you know, we had to figure it out on our own. I had been in some so-called advanced Kaplan class, which I dropped out of almost immediately because it was total trash. And so it's like, how are you going to systematically learn? It tests your ability to learn, unless you got a tutor who's already broken it down for you. But even then, you got to learn stuff still. But at least you don't have to organize your learning and manage your learning. But I think that's one of the main things it's testing. And that's probably why it's a great predictor for law school. Because like I was saying, if I'm right, that law school is taught really poorly, then you're going to succeed only by teaching yourself. And the LSAT is like that too, because usually it's taught pretty poorly also. And so the people who know how to teach themselves, and how you're going to teach yourself, reasoning, thinking, reading, all the same LSAT skills, basically. So that's the one thing that I think it's testing throughout every portion of it. Is how can you synthesize, analyze information, patterns, errors, etc.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, you know, my sort of thought on it, not that it matters what I think, but I tend to see the LSAT as testing the same, you know, that all of these sections test basically the same kind of skills.
True.
You know, just through different sorts of prisons. But now, a couple times in your last answer, you know, you made reference to good teaching.
Yeah.
Good tutor or something like that. You know, and obviously, good teaching, I mean, it's a gift. You know, so few people can do it. I think that good teachers are vastly under-rewarded in life and unrecognized. But what do you think, in say, one or two sentences, what makes somebody a good teacher?
Well, I think the most important thing is you have to care about the results, because if you don't care about the results, you're not going to be driven to do all the work it takes to develop yourself so that you can teach well. And so I think it all starts with caring about the students and the effect that they have on others too. I think it starts with that. And then, like I said, it progresses to developing yourself. When I assess my own ability to teach, I remember reading hundreds of books outside of my courses to develop my own knowledge about the world, philosophy, language, history, economics, neurobiology, all kinds of things. And they're the same stuff that comes up on the LSAT. And so, but why did I do all those things? Because I wanted to make a difference in the world, to help people. And so I knew I had to figure out what's going on in this world. And so I think it starts with wanting to make a difference, and then it progresses to training yourself to be knowledgeable and to be a good communicator and all kinds of things like that. And so I think those are the two main things.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to, you know, hear you talk about caring about the student. I sort of kind of think that in most cases, really good teachers care more about the student than the student cares about the teacher.
Sure.
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, I think can be very, very tough about it.
Yeah.
But So what about correlation, similarities between bar exam and LSAT? What are your thoughts on that? So I think you told me, you either told me during this call or when we were chatting before it, you were doing some kind of bar exam tutoring prior to LSAT tutoring. Is that right?
Right, right. Well, so I think there's a lot of similarities. When I prepped, self-studied for the Illinois bar exam, I was 5 years out of law school approximately, and I've spent about between 2 and 4 months reading about 10 hours a day to self-study for the Illinois bar exam. And similar to LSAT prep in its intensity, for sure, probably harder. Although you only have to pass, so like somewhat easier, but also more difficult material, perhaps.
Well, and, it's the quantity of it. There's way, way more material.
Maybe that's it. I can't tell for sure. But
out of the Illinois bar, it's been so long since I've done this. Was it 1 day multi-state and 1 day essays? Is that what it was?
Yeah, basically it was like something like 300 multiple choice questions 1 day for like 6 hours, and then another day of like a bunch of essays.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so yeah, in terms of the multiple choice, there's some skills that you could sort of see in terms of eliminating answers and they're trying to play, and you know, certain questions trying to play on your emotions to get you to pick a wrong answer, and there's, you know, these grammatical keywords that sometimes make a difference, not so much like conclusion and premise indicators in the bar exam, but and or and all these different words, so there's some similarities for sure. I think the bar exam sort of takes for granted the reasoning skills that that they're testing on the LSAT, and then it asks you to deploy them in actual situations in addition to deploying the knowledge of the law that you've been learning when you're studying for the bar exam and when you're in law school. So I think those are the main similarities and differences between those tests. And of course, there's so much more writing and it's graded on the bar exam. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What is the pass rate in Illinois? I know the pass rate varies tremendously throughout the country.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably about 60-something% or maybe 70. I'm not sure.
So there are people who fail.
Could be babies.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, why 5 years? Why did you it's unusual, I think, to graduate and not do the bar exam immediately. It's probably easier to do the bar exam, right, when you graduate from law school, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah, almost definitely easier. Although in my case, I'm constantly, you know, reading stuff about law and different things. So it wasn't too much more difficult, I don't think. But I was busy doing, running a business. I had, you know, at various points, I had like 1 or 15 different employees in this business that I was running. And so I was just going with that. And, you know, we were helping movie stars and people in who couldn't afford their rent, and all kinds of people getting furniture and you know, moved and delivered and all kinds of things. And so I was just real busy with that.
But you somehow made it back into teaching.
Yes. Well, I was teaching there too. You know, wherever I go, I start teaching because I start learning. And then I start, you know, and then I'm interacting with people and I need them to catch up, you know. So I was teaching my employees, you know, and I was teaching, you know, all kinds of people, all kinds of things. But yeah, I'm back into more kind of formal teaching. But, you know, some of my employees would call me sensei or something, you know. So,
yeah. But always part of your DNA.
Yeah.
You always find your way home.
Right.
Your natural habitat as a teacher.
Yeah.
So then at what point did you get into the LSAT stuff?
Well, after I passed my bar exam, I was looking for something to do. I did a little bit of legal work. I was also doing some tutoring, and it was bar exam, it was history, it was economics, it was all kinds of things, but it started transitioning more and more to LSAT, and then I just went full on to the LSAT as I learned more about it, because it had been like 10 years since I had taken it. And I didn't really know its significance or its nature or anything, but I got into it a bit, and then I realized that there was a huge need for exceptional LSAT material and prep, and I thought I could fill that need, so I started doing it.
One of the things that I find interesting about you is that there are very, very few people who take the time to try to, at least I believe there are very, very few people who take the time to try to replicate the material, you know, write their own stuff.
Right.
And I would have to think that that would help you understand the structure of the stuff an awful lot better.
If you're trying to replicate it. Oh, yeah. If you're trying to write the, I mean, it's just exponentially, I couldn't imagine teaching without trying to write this stuff, because I mean, it just becomes so ingrained, all the things that you're trying to do when you're constantly trying to replicate or even make it harder than the real LSAT. A lot of the stuff I write is more challenging than the LSAT, I think, and students. And it's obviously more difficult. A lot of the stuff, it's longer, it's more dense, it's more complicated. And so, yeah, I mean, that's just a critical part of trying to develop yourself so that you can actually be bringing something different and new to the table and to students.
Well, I think it definitely is significant. I think it's certainly a credit to you. I mean, you know, I mean, I was doing this so long ago that, or at least when I started doing it, that, you know, there wasn't the availability of the test that there is today. So I had to spend a lot of time, you know, trying to create that kind of curriculum. So I appreciate how difficult it actually, you know, it is to do that. So that's great. Now, do you do any live stuff, or is all of this over Skype, or what do you use anyway?
Occasionally I'll do live, but most of it's FaceTime or Facebook Messenger video or phone calls or stuff like that. Skype also.
Interesting. So that must require a certain kind of skill, especially to manage things like logic games.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have, you know, in everything I do in terms of teaching, I try to really boil it down to the essentials. And with logic games, I've really come up with a system that I've never seen anybody else use. It's not worlds different than everybody else's systems, but it's more simple, more intuitive. And so students can, like I say to students, like, we're not drawing like masterpieces of art. We're just drawing some lines and stuff. So we can do it without visuals. We can, you know, just like you and I are talking without visuals, I can explain, you know, what to do in logic games without visuals. But, you know, a lot of students prefer to have the visuals anyway. So we do it with, you know, FaceTime or whatever. But yeah, it's all about the approach, I think. And the systematic, having a systematic approach, and then there's not much to explain. You explain it one time, we're doing the same thing in every game, more or less. And so that's how it works, basically.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is that you're better off being highly competent with a smaller number of things than incompetent with a larger number of things. Do you agree with that?
Oh, well, yes, assuming that the smaller number of things is comprehensive and covers all your bases. And that's the key, really. You can know a small number of things and do poorly. You can know a large number of things and do poorly. The golden area to be in is know a small number of things, and those things actually work reliably well.
So to know the right small number of things and being able to execute them well.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, that's great. You know, we're sort of coming to the end here. So, I mean, I've been kind of asking you questions and this, that, and the other thing. And, I mean, do you have any particular message for potential students who you'd like to end this with? I mean, you do have a website, and I've seen it. I was looking at it tonight, bestlsattutor.com.
Yeah.
bestlsattutor.com, which is different from when I first saw it last summer. It's simpler. Oh,
yeah.
You're following your advice in your website design.
Yeah, it's simple. I try to keep it simple. I should probably make it more simple. And, you know, I just want to, you know, I just want to communicate with the website. And I guess now there's so many students who struggle so much with this test. And a lot of students start thinking that it's them. I mean, even tonight, I see students posting on the group, oh my God, I'm ready to give up on the LSAT. I just can't.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just so sad to see, because there's things that any student can do to keep improving, unless you're at 180, but there's things to do. Certain students, they don't, I don't know. I guess some people of course cannot afford anything. And, you know, I try to do what I can for certain students that in that position, in addition to writing all the free questions that I post on the group and helping students that way. You know, there's some students that I can take on for a reduced rate and stuff like that. And I do that. So many students beat their head against the wall for so long with this test, and it's totally unnecessary. But a lot of them have, in my experience, gone to classes, gone to tutors, and have not gotten the results they wanted. So, reach out for help. It is possible to succeed, and this doesn't have to be a nightmare. It's totally learnable. You just have to have a good guide.
I think that's right. It's kind of like this. I mean, somebody's got to get a high LSAT score. Might as well be you, right?
It can be literally anybody.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a nice, encouraging thought to end this with. So I'd like to thank you I know for an absolute fact that you took some time out of tutoring a student, okay, you know, to do this. I saw it with my own eyes, and I thank you for that very much.
No problem. Thanks so much, John.
Okay.
All right. Have a nice night. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.